This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Michelle Nunn and David Perdue may have Senate campaign ads all over TV these days, but the man they're fighting to replace is a little busy, too. Senator Saxby Chambliss, a Republican, is the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he joins us in our studios. Senator, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks, Dennis. Always good to be here.
As we speak, we're still learning the details of a raid aimed at rescuing Americans held captive by the Islamic State, ISIS, ISIL, whatever name you want to give them. They apparently were being held in Syria, and the raid failed because the hostages had been moved. All of the American soldiers apparently survived. Did you know about that raid either before it happened or at the time?
I did. I was briefed the afternoon that the raid was going down. The mission was explained to me, and the way it was going to be carried out was explained. And they called in the next day to, again, let me know the result of the raid. And obviously, when they got there, they did not find the captives that information had led them to believe were there. And of course, this was a serious firefight, as has been reported. And we killed an awful lot of bad guys. And unfortunately, one of our guys was wounded, but it was not successful from the standpoint of getting the hostages or, getting the captives that they had hoped to find there.
Did you have any problem, though, with the raid itself?
No, I didn't. Those things are not uncommon. I frankly, in my conversations with the White House the day after the raid, a lot of it centered around, well, did they know it was the United States that was carrying out the raid? Something's going to be released about this, obviously, on the other side. And I'm a little bit surprised, frankly, that now when it was, in fact, released weeks later, it comes out from the White House as opposed to coming out from the Islamic State.
Did you have any problem, though, with the White House releasing it? I mean, we're not exactly giving away anything to the Islamic State there. Obviously, they already knew about it.
Well, I'm not sure they knew it was us, but I don't know why the White House did this. I've tried to rationalize in my mind a valid reason for doing so, and I'm not sure there is one. This was obviously a secret operation, and I'm not sure what the benefit to releasing the details of the raid are, but
could it possibly be, and obviously I'm trying to guess as well, that we've just lost a U.S. photojournalist in a particularly brutal way, and the administration might be trying to say, look, we have been trying to go after these people. We're not just sitting still.
Well, if that's their reasoning, then that's a political reaction to what happened, unfortunately, to Mr. Foley. I would have had no problem with explaining to the families of all of these individuals that we had hoped to find as to what we tried to do. But I'm just not sure of the value of releasing it. But it's out there and is what it is.
But you don't think we've lost any strategic intelligence because of this?
No, I don't see how we have.
The Islamic State has made a list of demands for other hostages, money or a prisoner swap or something like that. Should the U.S. take the position of we will consider no deal before we even know what their demands are?
You cannot let terrorists set policy of the United States. And if you strike a deal with them, that's what you're doing. To some extent, we did that in the Bergdahl exchange.
Mm-hmm. That's where I was going.
And obviously, I was very critical of that. I still think it was not the right thing to do, and I cannot imagine this administration in any way acceding to the demands of these terrorists. And these, Dennis, are some of the nastiest, most brutal and violent terrorists that there are and that we've ever encountered in the world.
And the president said we will pursue them relentlessly, but what are our options? I mean,
well, the president, as I heard him say, we should contain them. We don't need to contain them. We need to wipe them out. That's the only thing they understand. And then you get to the next step, which is your question, what do we do? I think the airstrikes have obviously been very successful. That's why we're having this discussion today.
But we airstrikes need to ramp are short-term, aren't they?
We need to ramp up the airstrikes. There are other areas where ISIL is operating in a very effective manner that they're not being struck, and other parts of Iraq. We need to ramp up the targets, in my opinion. But overall, here's what I think, and I have expressed this publicly, and I have talked with folks like General Jack Keane, for whom I have such great respect, and this is his idea is an idea that I have totally adopted, and that is we need to show leadership here. The world is looking to the United States for leadership in so many areas, and we failed them. But here's another opportunity. And as General Keane has said, what the president should do is convene a summit of all the neighbors in the region. They are the ones that have the most to lose by this. The United States should lead the effort. We should provide the right kind of military support without boots on the ground. And we can do that. We can provide funding. But I don't think that's an issue. I think the issue is the neighboring countries to Iraq are simply looking for somebody to come in and provide the right kind of leadership to address these terrorists and to stop these terrorists in their tracks now. And it's a perfect opportunity for the president to do that.
But one of the neighboring countries is Syria. And one of the problems we have is that ISIS has safe havens in Syria. And ISIS is fighting the regime of Bashar Assad. Does this put the U.S. in a position where it might have to work with Assad to some degree despite his use of chemical weapons in the civil war in Syria?
No. Well, we should never be on the same side with Bashar Assad in any way that I can imagine.
But then how do you convene a summit of the neighbors without Syria and Assad?
Well, Syria is not in jeopardy as a result of what ISIL is doing inside of Iraq, except that, as you say, the border between Syria and Iraq now is porous. It basically does not exist, and there's a free flow of soldiers as well as weaponry going back and forth. It's kind of ironic. We are not involved by being on the ground in Syria. The president's made that conscious decision. As a part of the operation against ISIL, there may come a point in time where if they look to Syria as a safe haven, we have to go after ISIL. And if that means going after him in Syria, that may be a discussion that Congress would have to have.
Does that
with
mean
the White House.
Physically? You said no boots on the ground, though. Does that mean physically going in? Because airstrikes, as effective as they could be, could only do so much against a force which one moment acts almost as a state and the next moment can morph into a guerrilla force.
I still don't foresee boots on the ground. I mean, I think you can be very effective as we're being inside of Iraq today with targeted airstrikes. I just think the expansion of those airstrikes is the next step. We need to respond to this horrific act that the world saw in the last 48 hours in a way that says to ISIL, don't ever do this again. I mean, right now they're sitting there with no reaction towards it, basically other than a world outcry. But we need to respond to that kind of violent act in a very forceful way.
And you think airstrikes would be enough to send that message?
Well, I think at least that's where we are right now. That's why you need to convene the neighbors. The neighbors are the ones that are threatened from the standpoint of the expansion of the caliphate and the expansion of controlled territory by ISIL. And if boots on the ground are necessary, then they are the ones that should be willing to step up and do that.
Do the neighbors get along among themselves, though, enough to actually show up in the same place at the same time?
You know, interestingly enough, there seems to be a rallying around, in spite of differences over the years between the various countries, there's been a rallying around this cause. And Can it be worked out? We don't know until we try.
Does this whole episode demonstrate a real dilemma for the U.S.? You have President George W. Bush invading Iraq. A lot of people think that that invasion actually helped with the rise of radical groups like ISIS. President Obama takes us out of Iraq, and it's felt by many people that that allowed ISIS to secure bases of operation. So are we in a position where almost you can't win, at least on our own?
Dennis, I've been in the political arena now for 20 years, and I have never seen a more complicated world than what we have today. You and I have just talked about the fact of what's going on in Syria. And when you think more about that, the Iranians are on the side of Bashar Assad. The Russians are on the side of Bashar Assad. While we are not fighting them, obviously we have an interest in seeing him removed. Then you move across the way into Iraq, and the Iranians are just like us. They're in opposition to ISIL. The Russians are nowhere to be seen there, but we're having discussions with the Iranians over the nuclear issue, and the Russians obviously are somewhat involved in that. It is a part of the world that Americans have a difficult time getting their arms around. It's pretty easy to see why. It's just very complex.
And there are some folks who say we shouldn't be there to the extent that we are.
Well,
partly because of that.
We do have a national security interest. We can't afford to let the ISILs of the world, the Al-Qaedas of the world, have free run of territory where they can train and prepare to attack American Americans. We know that's what they're going to want to do. They've made that not only a very a conscious statement on their part, but the acts that they've carried out have validated their desire to kill and harm Americans, both on domestic U.S. soil as well as otherwise. And they're not leaving our European friends out of that mix either.
There have been a lot of questions lately about a Defense Department program under which local law enforcement departments have been able to obtain military gear at little or no cost. And in light of the response to the protests of the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, there are concerns about how those departments use that equipment and how easy it is for them to get it. Do you think it is too easy for local departments to get gear that they might not then train to use properly?
Well, I think if we are going to give it to them, then it just makes sense that they've got to be trained. And that's pretty sophisticated equipment. It's MRAPs and other vehicles are not the run-of-the-mill type of vehicles that are used in any type of police activity. They're used in military activity, but not necessarily police activity. I don't know that it's that it's too easy to access it, but I do think that we certainly need to review the policy, and we need to make sure that if local law enforcement officials are going to receive that equipment, that they get the right kind of training.
Because right now, the allegation is at least all you have to do is fill out a one-page form. And when I asked Covington Police Chief Stacy Cotton about this, about whether there's any state training that goes on once they get it, he said he didn't know of any. How concerned are you about that?
It would be pretty easy for us to have, say, the National Guard to provide the training on it. Those men and women use that equipment inside Iraq and Afghanistan in the times that they were there, and they'd be able to do it.
And that raises the question, then, shouldn't that equipment just be left to the National Guard? I mean, should local departments have the kinds of heavy weapons and gear that some of them do have?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer. Obviously, police are not at war, so to speak. They're there to provide law enforcement activities. And while I want to make sure they have all the equipment they need to carry out their job, it will be a continuing policy decision as to whether or not heavy equipment is consistent with the rules of what is required to carry out true law enforcement activities.
Should Congress do anything? Congressman Hank Johnson, one of the members of the Georgia delegation, has said he'd propose a bill to require restrictions, not a ban, but restrictions and local government approval, the county commission or the city council or whatever, saying yes first. Does that sound, at least in principle, like a good idea to you?
Well, I guess if somebody's saying that, your immediate reaction is, well, that's probably not a bad idea. But the fact of the matter is, the folks who are giving out the equipment, i.e. the Department of Defense, they're the experts. The county commissioners are not the experts. And the Department of Defense needs to make sure that they're doing the right kind of screening in advance of any of this equipment going into the hands of local law enforcement folks.
Should Congress do something, even if it's not Congressman Johnson's bill, then?
Well, you know, Congress tends to sort of mess things up when we get involved in the weeds and in the details of something like that. And I don't mean to be dodging it, but I just think the right kind of relationship between the Department of Defense, the National Guard, and local law enforcement agencies can solve this problem.